Hello everyone, welcome to my presentation about using Vertayo VSOC in Go on multiple operating systems and on multiple platforms. So first, a few words about myself. I'm Christophe Ferjeau. I've been working at Red Hat for more than 10 years as a software developer. I used to be working in the virtualization team on SPICE, which is a protocol to remotely access your virtual machines. But nowadays, I'm part of the CodeReady Containers team, which I will give more details about in a few slides. So what are we going to discuss today? So first, CodeReady Containers. Then we will go quickly over the user mode networking that CodeReady Containers is using. And then we will focus on the VSOC usage in Go, on Linux, on macOS, and on Windows. So what is CodeReady Containers? It's a way of running a Red Hat OpenShift 4 cluster on your laptop or on your desktop machine. So basically anything you have locally, you can run OpenShift 4 on. What is OpenShift? It's basically an enterprise-ready version of Kubernetes made by Red Hat. So yeah, it's a Red Hat product. So as a Red Hat employee, it's kind of expected I'm working on that. Why do we do that? Basically, it allows you to quickly start a cluster, to break it as much as you want, and then to just drop it and recreate it, which is very useful when you do some development and you need to do some debugging, or it's not really stable. You don't really want to break your production cluster or something shared with others, and it's also useful for testing. It can also save you some money, because if your Kubernetes instance is running on AWS or some cloud provider, can be a bit expensive to do a lot of testing there. So it gives you some convenience of running all of that locally and yeah, some flexibility. So this is working on Linux, macOS, and Windows. So under the hood, it's a Go binary, which is named CRC, which is why the project is quite often known as CRC and not CodeReady Containers. And together with that binary, we have a big virtual machine image, multiple gigabytes. It's a Linux virtual machine, and in that image, we made an installation of OpenShift, which is customized to be running on a single node. So instead of needing like lots of machines to have lots of worker nodes, to have lots of master nodes, you have just this virtual machine with one node, and it can fit in a virtual machine running on a laptop or on a desktop. So it's running on multiple platforms, and on each platform we're trying to use the native hypervisor. So this is QEMU KVM on Linux, managed by libvirt. On macOS we're using HyperKit, and on Windows we use Hyper-V. And it also uses a user mode networking stack for the VM networking. We will see in a moment why. So the user mode networking, why? It simplifies the virtual machine networking because we are running on three different hypervisors. Each time the networking configuration is platform specific, configuring the DNS is also platform specific. You might need administrative rights on the machine to be able to do these changes. So it can quickly become a bit messy and harder to test because you have to take into account three platforms and the various versions of each platform. So yeah, it made things quite simpler from that perspective. The consistent IP addressing, it means like the IP address that the VM gets is the same on all platforms, which is also a bit simpler than what we had before. And most importantly, for our customer users, it allows to avoid some strict firewalls rules and some strict VPNs, which would either block the connection from the host to the virtual machine running locally, or some VPN clients might decide to redirect all the traffic, the network traffic through the VPN, which is not going to work when this network traffic is supposed to go between the host and your local VM. So this really helped with all of this. So this user mode networking is managed by Chivasotap VSOC. I gave a link to the project. It's being used by CRC and Podman Machine at the moment. And it's based on GVisor. It's using GVisor for the big part of its code. Basically, GVisor is an application kernel written in Go. And so we reuse the networking stack of this kernel in order to implement a lot of the networking that we need. So how does it work? Let's say it's fairly simple, a bit complicated, but well. So in your virtual machine, this starts in the upper left corner. So you try to reach fosdem.org with curl. So we have a tap adapter in the VM in order to redirect the network traffic to a helper process running inside the VM. This helper process then sends the network traffic to the host over VSOC, which is the part we're going to focus on later. And then the host gets the network traffic. It sends the network packets through a divisor, and eventually they are sent to the fosdem.org web server. And then the fosdem.org web server sends a reply, and it goes back the same way, but in the opposite way, until it reaches curl.fosdem.org, and this gets the response, and then the dialogue can continue between the virtual machine and the remote server. So this is implemented on Linux, macOS, and Windows. So the VSOC bits are also working on macOS, Windows, and Linux. So we always have a Linux virtual machine. It's only on the host that we have cross-platform code for the VSOC interaction. Regarding the user mode networking, I will be giving more details tomorrow in the continuous dev room. And now we are going to focus on the virtual VSOC communication. And now we get to the crux of this presentation, which is how do we use virtual VSOC on multiple platforms? So first, what is it? What is virtual VSOC? It's detailed in the QEMU wiki, but in short, it's a way of communicating between a guest and a host using regular POSIX sockets API. So you use socket, you use read, you use write. And yeah, you don't need to do anything special. You can have like multiple channel of communication between the guest and the host. And it's basically all magic and allows easy communication between these two. So each part of the communication, each machine taking part in the communication has its own address, which is called a CID. So the host is always CID2, and then the VM, they each have a different address. It starts from three, but yeah, it can be an arbitrary one. And then applications can connect to or listen on a port. You can have multiple ports in a given VM, and then each application can use a different port for the VSOC communication. So on Linux, how do we use virtual VSOC? So assume we have a Linux virtual machine and a Linux host. So first, we need to configure the VM to have a VSOC device. We will see in the next slide how it's done. And then on the host, you need to load the vhost VSOC kernel module, and you need the VSOC device slash dev slash VSOC to be accessible by the user. And once this is done, what is nice is that a lot of low-level tools, networking tools, have VSOC support. So we can just use them to create VSOC communication, very similarly to what we would be doing for regular TCP/IP communication or for Unix socket communication. So for example, I can use netcat from the nmap package, the netcat version from nmap. So netcat dash dash VSOC dash dash listen 2222. This will start listening on the current machine, which can be the host or the virtual machine. It will start listening on port 2222. And then on the other side, so in this case it's the VM, I can also start netcat, this time with just dash dash VSOC and no dash dash listen. I need to provide the CID. So since I'm on the VM, I want to talk to the host. As I said before, the host is CID2. So I put the 2 there and then the port number. And then the communication is established between the host and the VM, and I can just send data. You cannot see it there because it's not animated, but first the VM sends hello host to the host, and it appeared on the other side, and then the host sent back hello VM, and it appeared on the VM side. I recorded a short demo about that, but I won't have time to show it now. I will put a link in the slides if you want to watch it. So the virtual machine configuration with libvirt, it's fairly simple. You just add the VSOC device to the virtual machine. It has to be using virtio, and for the CID, either you tell libvirt, okay, just auto assign one, auto equal yes, or you can specify the one you want if you want to hard code it. In Go, there are some quite nice libvirt bindings in order to interact with libvirt XML, which are the libvirt XML Go bindings. And so I also put some sample code showing how you could do that programmatically. You don't need to parse the XML and then patch it manually if you want to do some editing in Go. You can just use this very convenient library. So if you are a programmer and you want to do some communication over Vataio VSOC, so we'll be talking mostly about Go here because this is what we're interested in. How does it work? So if you look at Go documentation, you can find some low-level AFVSOC support. So you can use the very low-level Unix API for networking with AFVSOC. So it's basically a mirror of the C library implementation of sockets. So you have a socket call, you have read and write calls, but it's not the networking functions that you are used to be using in Go. In Go, when you have networking code, usually you use the net package, which has the CON interface in order to read and write from the network, and which has the listener interface in order to receive, to wait for connections from other machines. And so, if you want implementations for that, for VSOC, you need to use an external package, which is mdir/vsoc. But once you have imported that package, you get implementation of these convenient interfaces, and you can use VSOC in your Go code as if it was a TCP/IP connection, or if you had a net listener for TCP/IP. So how does it look? So first, you need to know the CID and the port that you are going to be connecting to. And so in this case, the VSOC package has a constant for the host, but I could just use 3, 4, 5 if I was connecting to a VM. And then the VSOC package provides a dial method, which is very similar to what you do for TCP/IP or Unix communication. You just use dial as well. So very similar API. And if the dial succeeds, you have an instance of an object implementing the CON interface from the net package. So you can just use it in all the method which accepts netcon object. So for example, you can use the io.copy to copy data between the guest and the host, and it's just going to be working fine. Yeah, any context in Go where you can use a net.con, well, you could use the one returned from vsoc.dir. So once you have the connection, it's fairly easy to integrate that with your pre-existing code. And for the listening part, it's almost the same. So once again, it has a listen method which returns a listener implementing the Go the net listener method. So you run vsoc.listen and you specify the port, and that's about it for the vsoc specific code. Once you have that, you can code listener.accept, which is a method of the netListener interface. This returns a con, this blocks until you get a connection, and it returns a net.con when it succeeds. And then you can use that connection wherever you want. So once again, I use io.copy here, and it just all works as regular Go code. And so this is it for the Linux part. We can switch to the macOS Vataio VSOC support. So on macOS, we're using HyperKit for the hypervisor. So if we want to use a Vataio VSOC device, we have to specify that on the command line. So we add a dash S, so we need to put a PCI slot, then the Vataio SOC device. Then we specify the CID that we want to use for the guest, and then we have to specify a path. Why do we need that path? Because with HyperKit, the VSOC communication is happening over a Unix socket on the host, and so it's the part where it's the directory where the Unix socket is going to be put in. And then the Unix socket has a magic name. It needs to be named CID dot port in hexadecimal, and then HyperKit will know, okay, if the guest tries to use this port and has the CID 3, then the communication is going to happen over that Unix socket. If you want to use a different port, you will have to use a different Unix socket. And so how does it look in Go code? So this time we don't need an external package because Go has out of the box support for Unix socket. So we build the name of the path that we want to connect to, and then we can just call net.listen on this Unix socket, and we get a listener, a regular net listener interface that we can use to wait for connection from the VM to the host. And when that happens, then we can do something with the connection that we get. The connection part, if we wanted to connect to the VM over VSOC, I didn't put an example for that because we're not using this in CRC, and I did not really have time to test if it was working as expected. But basically, I would just use the same Unix socket name and use net.dial to do a connection over this Unix socket. So now on Windows. On Windows, it's a bit more complicated. It's a bit different. It's not really VSOC, VTIO VSOC communication, which is happening, to be honest. So what is going on Windows? So inside the guest, the Linux guest, the Go code is exactly the same as on the other platforms. We use this VSOC package we saw before. We create a connection using vsoc.dial. So it's all the same from the perspective of the Go code. It's at the kernel level that you have to load a different kernel module, hfvsoc. And why? Because on Windows, they already have something in Hyper-V, which is a bit similar to VTIO vsoc, but obviously, which is implemented very differently. And so this hfvsoc kernel module knows how to tunnel the VTIO vsoc data over this native Hyper-V VM bus. So this is why on Windows we need to load that kernel module. It can be done in a UDEV rule, saying, okay, if I'm on a Windows hypervisor, just load that kernel module. And so the communication is going over that VM bus from Hyper-V. And so this means on the host, we are not really going to be writing VTIO vsoc code, code to interact with that. We're going to write Go code to interact with the Hyper-V VM bus. Once again, we have to use an external Go package for that, which is in linuxkit slash vtsoc, and then there's a hvsoc implementation over there. And very similarly to what we had on Windows, we have implementation for net.con and net.listener in that package. So we just need that package to create the connection, but once we get a connection, we can use all the usual Go APIs to do stuff with our network connection. One more thing on Windows is that you need to explicitly enable vSOC communication in the registry. So for that, you have a special directory. I put the path there, virtualization, guest communication services. And this registry needs to contain a key with following a template. So the end of the template, it always has to be this way. And the beginning, you will put in hexadecimal the port number that you want to communicate with the VM. So you put the VTIO vSOC port number in there, and this will enable the VTIO vSOC communication for that VM. So I put some links giving more details about that because it's a bit magic. But yeah, remember, you have to have this registry key. And so once you have done that, so the Linux VM is running, it's trying to do some VTIO vSOC connections. And so how do you start listening for these connections? So you use this external hvsoc package. So we can see here the magic GUID I was mentioning. So it's used to create the connection for between the guest and the host. So this 400 at the beginning, it corresponds to the port number that we want. And so then we just call hvsoc listen on any address, and the service ID corresponds to that GUID. It's a bit magic, but this way the VM is going to be able to talk to the host. So the VM will think it's VTIO vSOC, and the host will think it's a Hyper-V VM bus. Once again, I did not put the client code, the dial code. There's an implementation for that in hvsoc, but I did not test it. I expect it's going to be working as well as the listen stuff, but I did not test it. And so we are getting to the end of this talk. So a few more things that we can do. On Linux, it's possible to use systemd socket activation with VSOC. It's working very well when you use C code, C implementations. With Go, it's a bit more tricky because there's a Go package to deal with systemd socket activation. But this package is only using the standard Go packages for networking, which, as I said before, they don't know about VSOC. So if you want to use that with VSOC, you have to write a bit of code to special case the VSOC sockets and to be able to deal with them. Otherwise, this systemd socket activation Go package will send an error saying, okay, I don't know about this socket type. Some more work which is in progress from us on the CRC side is to support VSOC with the fourth hypervisor, which would be the macOS native virtualization framework. With recent macOS versions, you have an API which you can use in Swift or Objective-C to manage high-level virtual machines. And so we are currently trying to use this from Go. There are some Go bindings for it, and we're trying to switch to that. The main benefit is that it supports M1 out of the box, which is a big missing piece in HyperKit. One last thing. So in CRC, since we have all this VM stuff, the user mode networking working nicely, we also have work in progress to be able to run Podman containers directly on macOS and on Windows. So something a bit similar to Docker machine, but yeah, using the infrastructure that that CRC has in order to run Podman containers. So it would not just be OpenShift, it would also support Podman. So a few useful links there. The two main projects I talked about and my contact information. And we're getting to the end of this talk. So, well, thanks a lot to everyone for listening. We'll be around for a little bit in order to answer some questions. Thank you.
Sorry, there was one question on the chat, which is asking, why did we use HyperKit instead of the native macOS virtualization framework? Well, actually, there are two virtualization frameworks on macOS. There is the hypervisor framework, which is very low level, which is used by QEMU, for example. And there is a much higher level one, which is called virtualization framework. So the hypervisor framework, well, we basically needed to use QEMU if we wanted to use it. And to be honest, I don't know, the decision to use HyperKit was made before I joined the team. So we just kept using that. For the virtualization framework, it is only supported in macOS 11, which is a bit too new for what we are doing. I mean, it was too new for what we were doing. But yeah, we've started trying to use it. Actually, we have some code working with the virtualization framework to start code-ready containers on x86 and on the M1. So it's very likely that we are going to switch to the virtualization framework very soon. And Virtio vCircle also works on the virtualization framework. Once again, the API is a bit weird, but yeah, it can still work. So yeah, HyperKit was a historical decision, but definitely we are going to switch to the virtualization framework when we can. Are there any more questions? There is one more minute left. If not, well, thanks everyone for listening.